Fan Hotline's presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. And we go out to the Fan Hotline right now and welcome in our pal from Trib Life, Kevin Gorman. Good evening, Kevin. How are you?
Hey, Josh. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are now, under 48 hours from the trade deadline, Kevin. Outside of the Adam Frazier move a few days ago, any surprise that the Pirates have not pulled the trigger on any other deals? We're starting to see more and more kind of trickle out throughout baseball. Any surprise that they have not made any moves besides that one to this point?
To some degree, just because they pulled the trigger so fast on Frazier, and I think it stunned the team. I think it was a little bit of a reality hit, you know, maybe a little bit sobering for them coming out of the All-Star break and realizing, okay, they're about to break this up. So I think people thought there might be a domino effect to that. The guys, if they would have been traded anybody by right now, it would have been the guys on expiring contracts. So you're looking at, you know, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, Andrew Heaney, Caleb Ferguson, Tommy Pham, those type of guys. The Pirates are best if they are actually interested in trading Mitch Keller, if it was, you know, Key Brian Hayes, Brian Reynolds, O'Neill Cruz. I'm not sure if they are interested, but, you know, David Bednar, Dennis Santana, those would be the guys that are under club control that they could trade. They're going to wait right up until the deadline and try to create a bidding war, try to get the best possible return. So there's no interest in the Pirates end to trade those sooner rather than later. They'd probably prefer to wait and get the best possible package. And that tends to come as the deadline approaches when teams start to panic a little bit.
You mentioned the guys that are, you know, not under contract beyond this year. Pretty much a done deal that they'll get rid of them. And are the price tags, like, what do those price tags, do you think, look like at this point? Or are they just willing to move them for anything that they can get, essentially?
Yeah, they're going to be moving those guys for prospects. You know, Kiner-Falefa might be able to fetch more than a prospect, but not too many contenders are going to give up a major league player to get a major league player, if that's, especially if that's a guy that they believe can help them make the playoffs. And so they're going to trade high-end prospects, or in some of these guys' cases, maybe low-end prospects, maybe like, you know, single-A and double-A prospects is what you would get for, you know, a Tommy Pham or maybe a Caleb Ferguson, you know, given that they're on expiring deals. I think, you know, a lefty, in Heaney's case, even though he's a starter for the Pirates, he may end up in the bullpen for a contender, and he's done that. He did that with the Rangers when they won the World Series. Those are guys that are going to, you know, fetch you. You get what you get. You a little bit of salary relief, and you get what you get in return to help restock the farm system. And that's just, you know, kind of common sense baseball trades. The one guy that I could see them possibly keeping, although it would require them to sign a contract extension, but the one guy who's performed very well for the Pirates throughout, at least defensively at shortstop, is Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. If the Pirates were to consider trading Key Brian Hayes, and I've heard his name connected, you know, with a National League Central team. If they were to trade him, Kiner-Falefa could always move over to third base, which is his preferred position, which is where he won a Gold Glove with the Texas Rangers. So, you know, there's a possibility because of his versatility. He could stay at short, and you could use Jared Triolo or someone at third, or you could move Kiner-Falefa over to third and perhaps acquire a shortstop with one of the trades that they're making. I would imagine that's one of the positions that they're going to try to address, is, you know, a long-term fix at shortstop and also a corner outfielder with some power. That seems to be the priorities for the Pirates, is to add to their offense and fill those positions. Or, you know, given that, you know, Pham's most likely to be dealt, they're going to need a left fielder, and that, you know, Kiner-Falefa most likely won't be back, at least not at shortstop. I would think that, you know, if he returned, it might be a third, but that doesn't necessarily solve the third base problem.
Yeah.
Because you have a Gold Glove third baseman now. You need somebody to provide a little bit more power. I know I said this the other day, that, and then Andrew McCutchen hit a home run, but O'Neill Cruz has 17 home runs. Brian Reynolds and Andrew McCutchen, I think, have combined for 20 this season. Hmm. And you know, those are supposed to be the power positions, the DH and corner outfield spot. Cruz has more home runs than Key Brian Hayes, Spencer Horwitz, and Manuel Valdez and Jared Triolo combined. And you just can't have your corner outfield and infield spots not producing with any type of pop. So that's what the Pirates have to address.
In their defense, Kevin, no position has any form of pop this year.
No.
But I guess...
you wouldn't expect it from your center fielder either, you know?
Right. That's
your home run leader is the guy playing center field.
Right.
So, the Pirates rank either last or close to last in most major offensive categories. And that's where they were last year, and they fired the hitting coach. Now we realize it might not have been the hitting coach. It might just be that these players, you know, aren't showing any type of consistency at the plate, and that their hope for internal improvements from the likes of Jack Sawinski and Henry Davis, et cetera, that they didn't get that they were hoping for, that those guys that have some power would become the power bats. You know, Joey Bart would be another big disappointment from him, at least power numbers. And so that's what the Pirates have to address. And whether they address it now or they address it in the offseason, I think there will be trades made. So I don't think because someone survives the trade deadline doesn't mean the Pirates aren't willing to trade them. It's just that maybe they didn't like the return well enough to give them up right now, because I think they know that those are their trade chips. Those are their pieces that they can move and get something in return that can make them a better team for 2026.
Kevin, you mentioned Ke'Bryan Hayes. Where do things stand right now? Do you get a sense that a trade is likely for Hayes? And A, do you have an idea on the suitors? I know you said NL Central. And what could a return look like potentially for a player like Hayes, who we know is an exceptional defender but not a power hitter in any stretch of the imagination at the plate?
Yeah, the return's going to be a bit disappointing for Pirates fans, because a big part of Hayes is that, you know, he signed through, I believe, 2029 or 2030. There's a club option involved at $12 million in the last year. But, you know, he signed at $7 million for 2 years and I think $8 million for 2 years. So he's got four more years left on the contract and then a club option. So you're basically taking that salary off the Pirates' hands. And I think what they're trying to do is get like a top 10 prospect from the organizational prospect in return. So you're not getting back a bona fide major leaguer. You're not solving your problems by trading Ke'Bryan Hayes. You're reducing payroll and kind of ridding yourself of a guy who offensively hasn't lived up to the contract, but defensively has probably exceeded it. So it kind of all balances out in terms of somebody else acquiring Ke'Bryan Hayes would say, for what we're getting defensively, he's worth every penny. For the Pirates, who don't spend a lot of money, that's a big amount of money to pay a guy who's not giving you any offense. And so that's been the big disappointment, because when Ke'Bryan Hayes is hit, you know, he led the team in doubles 2 years ago, was a team MVP, and had a great, you know, final 2 months of the season. But he just hasn't done it with any consistency that they expected. I think they expected a guy who could bat 275 and give them 15 to 20 homers and probably 75 RBIs, and he's nowhere close to those numbers. And so that's the problem. He's been mentioned with, you know, the Detroit Tigers, with the Chicago Cubs, who are looking for a third baseman, and the Cincinnati Reds are a player in this as well, that they could possibly, you know, bring him in and move some of the guys that they have in the infield to the outfield. That's a real possibility. And Ben Cherington a couple weeks ago didn't dismiss the idea that he would be willing to trade some of these guys within the division. That's not as much of a factor because they play every team, and it's not as division heavy as it once was. So that's not something I would roll out. I thought Hayes would have been a perfect fit for the Yankees, given that they needed a defensive third baseman, but they went out and got Ryan McMahon, a guy who's up there in the conversation every year as a Gold Glove finalist and has some power to go with it. So they're out of the mix. But I would think if you're a team looking for a third baseman, Suarez is the number one target because of his power. I would think that if you're a team that has some pop and you have a small ballpark like Cincinnati, you know, all of a sudden some of those doubles could turn into home runs, and you can become a 10-15 home run guy at a place like the Great American Ballpark if you're Ke'Bryan Hayes.
Kevin, you wrote about this the other day. Ben Cherington said, to win, we're, quote, going to have to assume some risk in trades. What does that mean?
I think that means that they're going to have to take some chances on guys that are not proven major leaguers. That's how I read it, is that they're going to have to take in guys that are, let's say, a fourth outfielder for a really good team, or someone who is who's at the AAA level, you know, something like that, where they can – they can find a guy who who's kind of an unproven product but has some serious potential to tap into. So that's part of it. That's the part of it that I that's the part of it that I look at, is that the Pirates are going to have to be willing to take a risk on some of the players that they're getting in return. You're not trading an all-star for an all-star if you're the Pirates. That's the thing that I think fans should be aware of, is that, you know, you shouldn't be looking at other teams and scouring their major league rosters and saying, oh, the Pirates are going to trade this guy and get an all-star in return. That's not going to happen. They're most likely going to get a guy who's considered a top 10 prospect, but is a triple A, or maybe double A, but is killing it at double A. And the Pirates know that within a year or so, they can be a big help, and that they're going to get a chance with the Pirates, that whereas maybe they're blocked, their path to the majors is blocked with the team that they're in currently. You know, let's say the Detroit Tigers, they've got two guys that I don't think they're going to trade them to the Pirates, but if the Pirates were able to get the shortstop Kevin McGonigal and the outfielder Max Clark, either one of those guys, that would be a big win. And that's a risk thing, because you're talking about double A guys. But that'd be a bigger risk to me for the Tigers, is to try to win in the short term and be willing to give up. I mean, Max Clark was a top five pick the same year Skeens was drafted, and he was in the conversation for the Pirates of who to take if they didn't go the pitcher route. Mm-hmm. If they hadn't picked Skeens, they were looking at Wyatt Langford, Max Clark, Walker Jenkins, and, you know, Dylan Cruz. And Cruz wasn't number two. Cruz wasn't the first choice outside of Skeens. It was, you know, Clark. They looked at Clark and saw him very much the same way they saw Connor Griffin, as a five-tool talent who's coming out of high school. It's going to take him a few years to develop, but he's got all the ability in the world. So if the Pirates can pull off a trade like that, that's one you should applaud, even if it doesn't pay immediate dividends.
Still think they made the right call there, though, with Skeens.
No doubt. But I think it was a tougher choice than people realize. Paul, yeah. Skeens, prior to the College World Series, there was some risk. You know, you're taking a college pitcher versus, you know, taking college bats or high school bats. That it was a real conversation, and then I think he kind of ended that conversation by dominating the College World Series and making it abundantly clear to everyone that he was the best guy in the draft.
Yeah, no question. Kevin, the value on David Bednar right now, is it too high for the Pirates to not move him, or could you see them holding on? And what would lead them to hold on to David Bednar?
Well, if your plan is to win in 2026, and David Bednar has one more year of eligibility, so to some degree he's cost controlled. You could keep him and try to sign him to a long-term contract to avoid arbitration, or you could sign him saying, hey, we're going to take one shot here and develop somebody. But if you're truly trying to win, you're better off with a closer. If you feel like you're still in rebuild mode and years away, well, then there's no need to have an all-star closer, because you're not that type of team that's going to have enough opportunities for him. I mean, David Bednar has pitched in a couple games in the last month where he's pitched just because he'd been down for 4 or 5 days, not because it was a save situation. And that's not optimal for a guy in his position. But certainly, you know, he's making $5.9 million. He's outperformed his contract this year. He's been elite again, back to the 22-23 form. But he also could be one of your most coveted trade assets, and I could see the Pirates trading him for that reason. So I think with Mitch Keller and David Bednar, they're very much on the fence. I think the guys, and Ben Cherington said, hey, we don't have to trade. We don't have to dump salary. We don't have to trade the guys that are on expiring deals if we think there's more value in keeping them than there is in trading them. But at the same time, if you go back and look at past trade deadlines, they've dealt guys like that almost exclusively. I mean, there's been very few guys that have survived the trade deadline. You know, I think Rowdy Tellez was one last year, and then he ended up getting DFA. But that seems to be the Pirates' MO, is to trade the guys that are on the one-year deals and take whatever they can in return.
Kevin, last thing, you mentioned Keller. You know, I talked about it earlier in the show. I don't want to call it a misconception, but there's the notion out there that, you know, if you wait to the offseason, then you get more teams involved in a trade. Maybe you can get more. I also see the side of it, though, as well, where if you have a team that's desperate enough that feels like Mitch Keller is their missing piece to win a World Series right now, and they feel like they're firmly in the mix, maybe you can get somebody to overspend right now. How do you view that situation? Is it maybe more worthwhile for them, if they want to trade Keller, to wait until winter, or is maybe there enough out there right now to say their goodbyes with Mitch Keller? Or should they just say, hey, look, we got a good player, let's just keep the good player and build around him and Skeens and Jones and Bubba Chandler, et cetera, that we have in this pitching rotation.
Yeah, I mean, ideally the Pirates would keep Keller, and he would be kind of, if he's not necessarily the staff ace, he might be the staff leader. I mean, obviously Paul Skeens is the best pitcher, not just on the Pirates, but, you know, arguably the National League. I think Zach Wheeler is the only guy in the same conversation, and Tarik Skubal is the only guy in baseball in the same conversation. So he's if he's not one of one, which a lot of people would say he is, he's certainly one of three. But, you know, Mitch Keller is going to be making a lot of money for the Pirates. For a mid-rotation starter, Mitch Keller is probably underpaid at this point in his career. It's a very team-friendly contract, which makes him even more attractive, given that this is the kind of the unbelievable stat with Mitch Keller, is that he has more quality starts this season than Paul Skeens does. It's only one more, but he has more. And even if the record doesn't reflect that, you know, there's risk with Keller in the sense that, for one, the past two seasons, even though he's performed like an all-star, both in 23 when he was an all-star and 24 when he probably had a chance to be one, but Skeens got the nod over him, that Mitch has had bad second halves. And so you've got to wonder a little bit about that part of it. I don't think durability is an issue because he makes his starts. He was a 200 innings pitcher. He set a team record for strikeouts by a right-handed pitcher with, I think 210 2 years ago. You know, Mitch is a solid guy in that regard, but they're paying him a lot of money, and you're not paying Paul Skeens a lot of money, nor Jared Jones or Bubba Chandler. And those guys, when they are healthy and they're in the majors and are a little bit proven, they may move up into the 1-2-3 spots in the rotation in whatever order. It's going to be Skeens and Jones or Skeens and Chandler. But, you know, Mitch Keller kind of slips into a mid rotation spot with those guys, and you're paying him, you know, $15-20 million. That could be the way the Pirates could view it and say, you know, we could trade him and spend that money on a hitter. And maybe that's the way they should look at it, is that pitching is their strength, especially starting pitching. Johan Oviedo was just transferred to AAA Indianapolis today. He's going to make two starts there. So sometime in August, he should be back and pitching for the Pirates if everything goes well. And so, you know, you're going to get some things to help to boost the rotation. Bubba Chandler should make his debut at some point. Oviedo joins it. Jared Jones is back sometime next year, hopefully, you know, sometime around the All-Star break. That pitching is the one position the Pirates can afford to deal from a position of strength, and there's nobody stronger on that staff for them to deal than Mitch Keller.
Kevin, appreciate the great insight, as always. We'll do it again soon, and have fun over the next 46 hours and change with the trade deadline.
All right. Thanks for having me, Josh. Always a pleasure, man.
That's Kevin Gorman from The Trib. Kind enough to join us. Appreciate that. Fan Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Interesting. An inter-division trade of Ke'Bryan Hayes. Boy, you have to think Hayes comes back to Pittsburgh kind of a hated man in the division if he goes to a division rival. Maybe the apathy will have fully set in at that point and people won't really care, but yeah, I have a hard time thinking that people will be that people will remember Ke'Bryan Hayes very fondly after he got the big contract and then was just, you know, injury is a part of it, but just has not lived up to, at least offensively, that end of the deal. Defensively, yeah, absolutely. But I don't know. I don't think people care about what you do with your glove. I'm sorry. It's great. It helps you win baseball games. I'm not denying the importance of it, but I don't think fans really appreciate that. And they probably will not care for Hayes once he's gone. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia and Peters Township. You can visit them at southhillskia.net. On the other side, I want to close the show before we send it off to North Shore Tavern leadoff show with a big argument, a big fight that happened. Some sort of disagreement. An F-bomb was used, reportedly. So we'll talk about that when we come back. I'm Josh Rountree. This is the Fan Evening Show. Listen to the Pomp and Joe Show every Wednesday to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Contests run every Wednesday through Friday at 12 o'clock noon at 937thefan.com's contesting page. Joel, good show tonight. We're almost wrapped up. Dan Zangrilli standing by with North Shore Tavern leadoff show coverage. Did you see the Bryce Harper thing?
Yeah, how about that?
Bryce Harper apparently not a big fan of Rob Manfred. Apparently, Manfred was in the Phillies clubhouse, and of course, there's been talk about CBA negotiations and the potential of a salary cap. Reportedly, and this is ESPN has this. Everybody's running with this now. Bryce Harper told Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball, to, quote, get the F out of the clubhouse if he wanted to talk about salary caps. I feel like if you talk to, like, the boss like that, you should probably get suspended. I don't think you should be able to say to the commissioner of the league to basically cuss the guy out and get away with it. Jeff Passan had that first, I believe. He said, if you want to speak about that, you can get the blank out of our clubhouse, is what Passan said. Bryce Harper kind of seems like a little bit of a, what's the right word? It begins with a D and ends with a bag. And I've thought that since day one. The guy came into the league, 19 years old. He's been a great player. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's set to earn like $400 million in his career. And he's cussing out the head of baseball because he has suggested that a salary cap might help the league, which it would. A salary floor might actually help more. I think they're going about that maybe the wrong way. This is heading down, we're staring down, I think, inevitably a work stoppage. I mean, if the commissioner of baseball is getting cussed out in clubhouses, that seems like one of those stories when we go back and talk about, you know, labor stoppages over the years. That's like one of those stories that you would hear. Things really came to a head when so-and-so cussed out the commissioner in the clubhouse or in the locker room. And at that point on, everybody knew that there was going to be a work stoppage. That's kind of the vibe that I get from this.
Like, I was too young to experience whatever the 2004 NHL season or lack thereof. I kind of want to know what that would have been like, right, to have no hockey season that year.
Well, I'll tell you here. It wasn't that big of a deal because the Penguins were so bad. I mean, it was, but it wasn't because the Penguins were bad at that point. There was the thought of them moving as well. I mean, that started to, you know, come up around then. And on top of that, the Steelers got really good right around then as well. So that kind of squashed, I guess, the feelings and these parts a little bit. I'm sure for the diehard, you know, the true Penguins fans, it wasn't tough. And I remember that it was. You know, it stuck. It sucked not having hockey around for a year. But at the same time, I think here locally, with the Steelers doing what they were doing, that became the real story of that winter. The Steelers are always a big story, right? It's just kind of how it is. But this seems like a very, very bad situation in the making here coming up for baseball. We'll see. All right, that'll do it for me. More baseball talk coming your way. The Pirates out on the West Coast. Dan Zangrilli standing by with North Shore Tavern leadoff show. That's coming up next. Thanks to Shelby Cassesi. Thanks as well to Kevin Gorman and to Joel Nelson behind the glass. I'm Josh Roundtree. Talk to you next time. This is Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan.